Welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
Here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks. Today, we are going to be talking with Ginger Smith, who is living with dementia, and I can't wait to hear her story. It sounds almost unreal, but that's not uncommon when it comes to dementia with the struggles of getting diagnosed. So I know we're going to have a fascinating conversation. But before I introduce you to Ginger, I want to just encourage you to go to alzheimerspeaks.com, check out all of our free educational resources. That's what they're there for. You can also access our book, Betty the Bald Chicken, Lessons in How to Care. It's a great way to get a conversation started of, you know, if you're diagnosed, how you want to be cared for, and for those that care for you, helps them take a look at what they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing as well. And then, of course, you can always go to dementiamap.com, which is our global resource directory. And then last, I just want to mention two support groups I do. One is Caregiver Connect, which is in person at the Shoreview Community Center in Minnesota, the last Wednesday of the month from 10 to 11:30. We have care partners in one group, and we have respite care for those living with dementia in another. The second group is an online memory cafe, Arthur's Memory Cafe, that was one of the first in the country. And we meet the second and the fourth Wednesday every month online from 1 to roughly 3 p.m. Central Time. So that would be 2 to 4 Eastern. And for either of those, you can reach out to me at radio@alzheimerspeaks.com. I want to tell you next about QBlocks, and then we'll be right back with Ginger. I also want to introduce you all to QBlocks. They have been absolutely excellent to deal with. They have been in business for 18 years, and they serve the globe. I can't say enough good things about this company. I've had a lot of bad experiences, I don't know about you, with tech companies. They have made a very complicated process very easy, and their staff is so kind, so polite, so respectful to work with. And you know, when I am frustrated and ready to pull my hair out, they just smile and tell me everything's going to be okay. And they really are just on top of the communication, which alleviates so much stress as an owner when you're dealing with tech issues. You can get a 10% discount. Visit them at QBlocks, that's QBlocks.com. Or you can email them at letstalk@qblocks.com. For that 10% discount, just put Lori, L-O-R-I, in the inquiry form. And again, I don't think you'll be disappointed. I surely haven't been. I can't rave enough about this company. And that's kind of rare these days. So Ginger, I'm so excited to have you on the show. I always love hearing people's personal stories of living with dementia. I think they are so powerful and so insightful, and something that the public can't get enough of. And that goes for both people newly diagnosed, because they struggle with what to expect, their families and professionals. All of us need to hear your story. So first of all, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm just so honored. I respect you so much, Lori, and your association. You do a beautiful thing, a very, very needed right now with a population, elderly population coming strong. We just need so much education, so much resource, so much. I'm all for that. So if a tiny bit of my story can help others, that's what I'm committed to do.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. I'm going to have you kind of give us a little background on yourself prior to dementia, what was your life like?
Well, I'm going to be 87. I'm a 86-year-old woman who about 10, 12 years ago, I was a speech language pathologist. I had to retire due to symptoms of dementia. And early on, it was thought it was Alzheimer's because, of course, that's the most common, 80%. But I also demonstrated physical symptoms of shuffling walk, horrible tremors, and so they threw in Parkinson's. Well, that wasn't enough because I also exhibited a behavioral component, just temper, lewd behavior, things that just weren't me. And so I ended up actually in a wheelchair and then sent to a nursing home because I fell 8 times and ended up in the nursing home, bedridden, aphasic, hallucinating, tremoring, couldn't hold a pen or pencil, dysphagic, couldn't eat, all those things, and on all sorts of meds. I was on 30, no, not 30, 20 different medications. And when they removed the curative ones, as they do when you're in hospice, oh, I was in hospice dying. When they removed all the curative ones, just left the pain relievers, somehow, and I still don't know how, I began to get better.
Well, I think that's not as uncommon as we think it is. We put pill after pill after pill after pill out there, and we're not looking at how they're interacting with one another. And it can cause a lot of problems if people really aren't on top of it. But, as a patient, we think our doctors know what they're doing, and we trust them to know what they're doing. And most of us, I mean, I know I never knew that you could go to the pharmacist and ask them to analyze all the medications together and how they react to one another. So
Yeah,
you
you
want to
would
follow
think
that up.
so because I belong to Kaiser, which is a very, to be preventative. Why the pharmacist didn't say, "What are you doing to this woman? Why are you giving her antipsychotics? Why are we giving her all these meds?" And they didn't. And fortunately, because I was dying, they removed those things and slowly. It was slow. It took over a year, a year and a half. That was just about exactly 3 years to this day that I came home,
Wow.
and getting better slowly.
That's incredible. Now, when you were going through all of this, and if you're not comfortable sharing this, that's okay too, but did you have family? Were you married or have anyone living with you that could see what was going on?
Did I'm not married, but my son lives next door, and he's very brilliant, and he researched, but he had a mindset that didn't accept. I was diagnosed finally. I got to throw this in with Lewy body because I just fit all the symptoms of the physical, the mental, the behavioral, all that. And when I started to get better, they changed it to dementia with Lewy body features. And then when I came home, I petitioned Kaiser, my medical program, to take dementia right off the list. And they did. They did. And they even took off voluntarily bipolar once, which I was had been diagnosed, God, around, pardon me, about 20 years ago. Actually, it was Lewy body features at that time, 20, 30 years ago. Lewy body just wasn't known that much, and so they diagnosed me with bipolar, which I never really had, and I'm clear to that now. I'm on one medication for high blood pressure. That's all. That's over the counter things for my backache, but only one prescription med now.
Well, I know when you were talking about having different types of behaviors and stuff too, I was wondering about frontal temporal lobe because that can change your personality and how you act and react to things as well. But it's, most people don't understand that you can have more than one type of dementia. People think it's, A, B, C, or D, and you hit the trifecta, and probably more so with your
Yeah.
diagnoses. And it is kind of a crapshoot out there in terms of what the doctors do and don't know, and what they understand. And when you come to realize that's pretty dang spooky.
I love that trifecta. I'm petitioning right now, Kaiser. I want to look up my records. It's such an incredibly wonderful thing that happened. I'm so full of gratitude and appreciation. They didn't mean to do what they did. It was the lack of knowledge and the lack. I think our problem with Well, I'm going to say with Alzheimer's or any form of dementia, you're just not looked at the whole person. That they'll pick a one thing and they'll say, "Oh, that's it. She's got that," and then all the other behaviors, everything else was just kind of shoveled under the rug, so to speak, and they focused on that, on just one thing, and it's multifactorial, like you say.
Well, and I think some people would say too, as you age, sometimes some doctors don't take you as seriously. But then you look at all the young people being diagnosed that can't get a diagnosis either. And it's real easy to say it's a mental health situation when they don't have answers, or, well, they're depressed. Well, who the heck wouldn't be when you're having those types of symptoms? Who wouldn't be confused?
Absolutely. I think my family, they really cared, but they listened to what the doctor said and they formed their own opinions. When I came home, it was pretty horrifying because I was dying, they sold all my furniture. So I came home from almost an empty condo here with a hospital bed in the living room. Now I want to say there's some wonderful people in my life. I now have a bed in the bedroom that it was just all covered with junk. And I can get my son to come out and visit. So a lot of good things have been happening in my life, and I'm very appreciative.
Well, that's an amazing attitude to have with all that. A lot of people would be spinning in the past, and you're really living in the future
Thank
and
you.
in the present moment, which I think is so important because we can't control, what happened. We can learn from it, and it'll be interesting if you can get your hands on your records. Yeah, I'm sure they'll be paranoid you're going to sue them or something because that's usually where they go. But again, it could really be a good learning tool.
Yeah, I'm really lucky because I've been a member of Kaiser for over, God, it's been almost 40 years. I worked initially as an administrative assistant to the chief of staff. Then I put myself through graduate school as a transcriber, a transcriptionist. And then I went back and worked for Kaiser as a speech therapist. So I have a long history and I looked it up. I spent many a night looking that up and comparing my symptoms. I do a lot. I love a researcher by heart. And I also want to let people know that I also worked at Stanford Neurology Clinic as a speech. So I have a certain amount of knowledge in the field. I worked as a caregiver myself. I took caregiver training. And I just want to, if I could just throw one thing out, because the people are, they hear me and they form opinions on what happened. But I believe. I actually was what they call it early onset because I had symptoms in the 60s, the 50s. I actually had symptoms long, long before of dementia that I kept overcoming. I don't know if you know my history, but I kept overcoming, complex trauma, alcoholism, long history of recovery, thank goodness. But the bipolar thing I already mentioned, I kept overcoming, and I think that helped give me resilience. So when I was in my 70s, I was working with autistic kids. Actually, that was hard. 70 years old, and it was I just couldn't overcome anymore, and it just took me, and it took me, and it wasn't long that I ended up in the nursing home. I fought it, well, actually. By the time my family put me in the nursing home, I had like learned helplessness, anosognosia, where I didn't really know. I just didn't understand that I had dementia. I knew something was wrong, desperately wrong. But even with my working with dementia patients, I didn't ascribe it to me.
Sure. Well, it's interesting because, you had mentioned the Parkinson's and the Lewy body, and then, you had talked about the bipolar, and a lot of times they will give antipsychotics for those, which really just, they blow up Lewy body symptoms. And
Absolutely.
so there's so many different antipsychotics out there that people really have to stay away from. And even just, patients with dementia in general, things like Valium. I can't remember all the names of them, but I mean, there's just so many different medications that make such a huge impact. And if a doctor doesn't know those, counter reactions, they're not going to pick up on it. Or if no one's diagnosed the Lewy body yet because they're calling it bipolar, and then they're going to give it because, well, this works for that. There has to be a rhyme or reason. And I know with those medications, typically they follow up and they see how things are going, and sometimes they do blood draws and things like that even. But they need to listen to the families of what has changed since those medications have been given.
Well, and also I truly believe that it's the social behavior of the caregiver and the caregivers, both in family or that there are other ways you can treat a person with dementia than there are like they're like, for instance, I'll throw out creative fibbing, for instance, or just getting into their world or understanding that they don't realize. I didn't mean to be mean. I'm gonna also say that I lost 140 pounds because I believe food was lava. I wanted to eat. I would look down at that plate and there would be this moving lava and I couldn't get it to my mouth. So fortunately I'm normal weight now, but I was emaciated at one point and like I say, dying. So I also want to throw out, if I can, you mentioned or I want to mention the fact I am writing my memoir because I'm hopefully it'll be of help for people in far as my research. And I did add a tips for caregiver part. Maybe, oh gosh, I think it's around 10 pages. The whole darn memoir is 300. Yeah. And I had resources, you, of course.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And so I think it would really be for both patients if they're newly diagnosed, they can absorb it. Certainly for caregivers, that's what I would love to provide. That information to help them. It's a terrible, terrible grind. My heart goes out to caregivers. They have the hardest job in the world. My poor family or the people who cared for me, my behavior was so abhorrent. It was nasty, terrible things that I did. And I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to refuse showers or refuse food. It wasn't because I hated them. I actually have reason in my head for it.
Oh, sure. Well, like you said, when the food is moving and it looks like lava, that's the last thing you want to put in your mouth, or even if you're trying to get it, if it's moving, in your eyes, that makes it difficult. And there's always a reason for the reaction. And I think we don't ask that question enough. What is the reason? We label it instead. We label it a behavior instead of it's a clue for us to figure out something's wrong because this isn't their normal behavior.
No.
And so something is off, and we have to start looking a lot of times, I think, at the environment because it can be lighting, it can be sound, it can be colors, it can be taste. I mean, it can be so many different things. It can be medications, that aren't
Yeah.
mixing well together. But there's always There's always a reason if we slow down and look for it.
I just read somebody the other day. I did, like I say, I gather stuff from a lot of sources in my tips for caregivers, that whatever I can see that, but I'm doing it as a perspective of someone who lived it. Most of the books out now are written by caregivers, and I'm someone who came back and lived it, and I can say what was in my heart, what was in my mind, compared to, so I think I could give that lived perspective a twist.
Oh yeah, because we're just all guessing, we're not in your body. We don't know what it feels like, what it looks like, what it sounds like. And so yeah, if we can hear, that's why I think it's so important that we talk with people like you, because that lived experience, there's nothing more profound and exacting, and gives us great insights how to care better than hearing what the actual needs are out there, what it felt like, what I mean, because you might be able to figure out even what triggered some things
Oh
too.
yeah.
But,
I refused showers because I had lost so much weight. My rear end was bony, and sitting on those shower bench without a towel or a padding was agonizing for me. So I was screaming bloody murder. The water coming down scared me. They need to adjust the temperature before they put you in and then do it. Little things like that I have in my tips for caregivers that I can say that's why I was acting up. Like, and that it's not because I was trying to be mean, because it just looks on the surface like this person is horrible. Well, I wasn't. I was another person. I'm not that person anymore,
yeah.
fortunately for my family. But it's taken a long time, Lori. I was ghosted for quite a bit of time by many members of my family when I came home because of the way I acted. I'm getting them back.
It's good, but it is. It's all those little things. I remember my mom, she used to love the water, and all of a sudden she didn't like showers, and she was starting to really act out. And I thought, there's got to be a reason. And I happened to be at a Tipa Snow conference, and I talked to her afterwards. And I'll never forget this. Tipa said, "Well, as we age, we lose our fat pads." And I said, "Well, my mom's a big woman." She says, "It has nothing to do with size. It has to do with the nerve endings being closer to the skin." And she said, "So when we have," and this was before rain shower heads were really popular and stuff, "but we have that hard, forceful water pouring down." She says, "It's like somebody pounding on their back. It hurts and it's a shock." And then, like you said, the temperature, little things like starting at the feet and working our way up. And people will say they're cold. Well, then throw a towel over them. What's one more wet towel? So nobody gets hurt and the job gets done. And you don't have to worry about infections and disease, if someone is fighting their showers all the time, because that can be a whole nother ball of wax. It's using some common sense. But again, you don't know what you don't know. And if we don't have these conversations, then more people, the more conversations like this we have, the more people will get educated and they can share that information. Every community, as far as I'm considered, should have handheld rain shower heads in their bathrooms. And I know they still don't.
Yeah, I actually did an interview with Tipa Snow about a year and a half ago, and she asked me back. And I'm going to be on her program tomorrow. She called me a unicorn. I love that. Yeah, because I have kind of oh, a phoenix too, rising from the ashes. I was really, really tickled that she did because I really respect everything she talks about. Yeah, she's got it. So I incorporated a lot of my Tipa Snow's advice, giving it my own angle, and I think that people would be really happy to, I hope, read it, because I'm committed. This is my goal in life, is to help out. It's my purpose. It's almost like, well, I had a near-death experience, dying, and it's like I came back for a reason, maybe to help caregivers, to help people with my lived experiences of that not too many people can talk about being what happened and come back from it. And I fortunately have, and with great gratitude. So, and I'm so glad that you present what you do and that I'm my unusual history that you have accepted me to talk about it. Because a lot of people are not too thrilled with some of the things I talk about, the giving up the meds, for instance. They don't, or treating people, understanding that they don't mean what they, what's happening on the surface. So you got to go deeper. Some of them, and then they make the comment, well, you can't recover. Well, hey, hello, I did, and I have something I hope to say. I don't have forever. Being 86, they say you have a 50% chance of getting Alzheimer's or any sort of dementia at my age. I want to know. I passed a long 3-hour neurological evaluation not long ago, and I passed it with above average to above answers, and so I was cleared. I was able to get dementia cleared from my record too.
Wow, that's amazing. I know I've tried to get a couple of things off my chart. When I was giving care, I ended up having asthma, and I ended up I took a small like anti-anxiety type medication, and I said, I don't need that anymore. I just want that off. Oh no, we can't pull anything off your record. And I'm like, it was all triggered from the stress. And it's like, well, whatever, I haven't had it in, since what, 2001, when my dad died, for the anti-anxiety and my asthma, I haven't used my inhaler and I can't even tell you how long. And so it's kind of amazing what stress can do for our bodies. And then you add in all these other things. I can't even imagine being on 20 different medications, and the diagnosis that you got, they're all major, they're big thing. I'm a firm believer. I mean, I would love a cure, and I believe there are some medications that can help you not progress as fast, but I don't see a cure out there, probably in my lifetime. I'm 64. I would love to see that come to fruition. But
It
to
is.
me, dementia is kind of like cancer. There are many different forms of cancer, and there are many different forms of dementia. And we seem
Yeah.
to still be focusing on just kind of one theory based. I know many are trying to break through with other types of theories, but I think there's going to be a lot of different treatments for the different types. And then when you have multiple types, just like people have, their cancer metastasizes, and now, okay, now they've got lung cancer and they've got liver cancer, that changes their treatment plan.
Yeah,
And
dementia being a kind of an umbrella word too.
yep,
And
yep.
it seemed like I had pieces of different ones. And frontotemporal was one they threw out at me because of the behavioral aspect. That's Bruce Willis happened to Bruce Willis, and Robin Williams is my hero. What he went through, just horrible, horrible. That brilliant brain of his attacked and it can attack anybody. There's no limit to the race, the age, the country. It pretty much it's universal.
Yep, doesn't care how much money you make or don't make, or if you've been a good person or not in people's eyes.
Well, that's an interesting point. We're expecting the poor caregivers to love the person with dementia. What if they were pardon asked? That's I was no saint. I when I aggravated quite a bit of my family quite a bit before I got the dementia, so that added to the ghosting, I think. But I'm different. I the experience I had really changed me for the better. I think I'm a better person now. I'm certainly working really hard at being understanding and being honest and be transparent, as they say, all this new stuff coming. It was like I was an alien, being born, because I was had my dementia in 2019 during COVID, and I was in this lonely room. The people, the nursing home I was in, kept losing people left and right. It left me with only me and her mother, and we were totally isolated. People wearing masks. I'm hard of hearing. I couldn't understand people. So I went through that horrible experience of, I thought I was a granny drop. You know what a granny? Yeah, because my family had said, we can't see you for 3 months. The what? And it wasn't, I went through thinking that was happening to me. And then one day they pushed me past a TV and I saw people wearing masks. And I realized, oh my God, I'm not, that was so overwhelming. What a wonderful feeling that was, not to be, have that abandoned feeling and realize I wasn't.
Yeah, and there are families that do the granny drops at a hospital or an airport, all kinds of different places. It's just unbelievable. I couldn't imagine that. But it does happen. And the pandemic, I think, made everybody look at the world a little bit different. And I think it got a lot of people to be much more compassionate towards how we do care for people in community. Because they were feeling isolated, by themselves, not being able to go into work, not being able to see friends. And I think that opened family and friends' eyes of what a loved one's going through in a community as well.
I think it opened up Zoom, which I didn't even know existed when I came home, and I was still isolated. I was still ghosted, and I got this wonderful volunteer from Peninsula Family Service. I think almost every community has something, or if it doesn't, they sure should. That I've taken a lot of advantage of wonderful people in this world. Network, no, Next Door. I belong to a Next Door organization. Oh my, they have provided, I think I told you, they came in and cleared out my bedroom. They're my family now, in a way that I've established a real family, a real connection. I'm so grateful for them and for the people who have come back in my life. I had a horrible experience that in 29, what was it, 2019, almost 2020, when the sky turned red in California because of the fires. And I truly thought, I'm lying in bed, I'm motionless, I can't get out of bed at that point. And she had just fired a bunch of her employees because she didn't have any people left to take care of. And I thought, wow, I'm just going to lie here and get burned to death. I begged them to put me on the floor, at least so I could crawl.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-494-8310. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-494-8310. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-494-8310.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Oh, those were tough days.
Yeah, there was a lot going on, that's for sure. When you look back, I think as a kid, and granted our TV didn't cover near what it does today, but boy, the world is so fast-paced and there's so many tragedies that we hear about. And when you're by yourself, I know a lot of people my age, both younger and older, don't even watch the news anymore because it's just too much tragedy. They can't take it. And so they choose just to turn it off and try to live a more simple life. You know, is that good or bad? I don't know. I'm one of those. I don't watch the news near like I used to because I find it gets me down at times.
I do too, but I just am drawn toward it for some reason. And, you know, I have to admit, I do watch certainly more than I should. You know, I want to add something about my recovery, if I may, that I think really has helped a great deal, is something called neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I was born with some sort of, I hope, I don't know, they'll have to do an autopsy, wait till I die, but I'm going to donate my brain. I just talked to my son the other day. I said, I wanted to go to Stanford. And he agreed. So I'm in that process. But I think there was something in the neurons, maybe that quick weight loss pruned, they call it autophagy, maybe pruned some neurons and they were folded. That's what happened to Lewy body. They were able to open up. And there's so many exciting things coming down the, like you say, maybe not in your lifetime, maybe certainly not mine, but I'm seeing stuff left and right in my research that it just shows that I think it's going to happen. I really do.
Well, there's a lot out there now with, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like electric therapy and changes to the molecules and stuff. I mean, it's just constant, but they need more money for all these varied things. And I think we need more money poured into our care system too for social support. Like if it's via Zoom and getting people equipment and internet, or if it's in-person meetings, I think that social aspect is so critically important. I really think that's why my mom lived 30 years, was because she was socially connected.
Oh. Well, I'm a member of a number of, what do they call it, social support network. Dementia Alliance is one of very, very wonderful, like part of this. I call it my policy.
Yep, Dementia Action Alliance.
They're part of my policy. Also, Life Ring and Women for Sobriety, because I did have a history of drinking too much long time ago. I'm a long time survivor of that. But I like I say, I'm petitioning Kaiser. There's a test that they're doing a blood test now that they can see certain things that are precursors to dementia that they're discovering. And that's exciting too, is if you catch it early, there's so much more you can do with somebody. You can teach them ways and systems that can help before they have to pile on the meds. I mean, I'm not totally against meds. At my worst, I can understand why they had to give me meds. I was screaming. They had to put me in a special room. I screamed so much. I think if that's why I love the fact that your organization was really pushing forth for early recognition of the possibility of dementia and, go ahead and get tested. It can only benefit you and your loved one, because you don't have to end up in a nursing home and totally isolated. You can work with them in their home as long as possible. I really think that was so important. When I finally got home, I changed my diet. I mean, there are a lot of things that can be done: exercise, diet, music. There's so much more than just shutting someone in a room and giving them meds.
Yeah. Well, even just hydration for yourself. I mean,
hydration.
If you're not eating and you're not drinking fluids and they're still giving you the same amount of medications, that's going to have an impact, you know, on your body. And dehydration alone can cause dementia symptoms, lack of sleep. I mean, there's so many different variables, exercise, the food, the social interaction. I mean, it's, and the list keeps growing, all the time in terms of what all can really impact living healthy. And so many people, like you said, getting diagnosed early, they may or may not have to give up their jobs right away, depending on the company, depending on the symptoms that they have. I would love to see more companies working with people to be able to have someone stay on the job, maybe change their responsibilities a bit. But boy, getting booted out the door, that's hard on the ego. And that happens to a lot of people. You know, they're just told, no, you can't work here anymore.
I worked till I was 75 with the, wild kids, and my symptoms were showing, and I fought it. I got pretty good at what they call, not sundowning, but they call it sunshining, mm-hmm. where you can rustle up really intelligent conversation when you have to, like in front of a doctor. So here my fur family is saying, she does this, she does that. And I'm like, well, here I am, alert as can be. Walk out there, and I'm like, it took every bit of my energy to appear normal. Fought it so hard. And all the time my poor family would see me at my worst, it caused a lot of stress between us,
Oh, and that's so common. Families say that all the time. It's like, they acted perfectly fine at the doctor, and the doctor's looking at us like, what's going on? Or family members come in from out of town or friends, and they're like, what are you talking about? And people with dementia kind of giggle in the background a lot of times afterwards when they realize what happened. And it wasn't to be deceitful, but again, you're trying to protect your own dignity.
Absolutely. Your pride, your dignity, you're thinking you're not as bad as, you don't understand what is happening to you. Mm-hmm. I advise people, maybe do a video. Although, when you're deep into dementia, denial is such a big thing. You can watch a video, you're self misbehaving, and it's just clueless. That's not me. You faked it or something like that. I was hallucinating. People were coming in the house. I remember every one of my hallucinations compared to dreams. I forget dreams right away, but I can recite them to you just right now. They were usually about an animal being tortured. And I was able, this is another thing I would really be able to help caregivers with, is that I was able to use lucid dreaming with my hallucinations, and I was able to give them a happy ending, I had an injured donkey that was, and she ended up, me, I was the donkey, I ended up in a special animal preserve, happy. So I'm able to teach things like that, and yet I haven't quite got the caregivers to accept me yet, like I talked about before. I almost see me kind of as a threat to their caregiving. I think a little bit, that's my family was a little bit that way. They wanted to be the heroic caregivers, and here I am recovering and saying, wait a minute, I want to shower myself. I want to use the remote myself, mm-hmm. And it was tough wrestling that from them, but my independence and my pride, I fought hard for it. And things are better, Lori. They are 100% better. My Christmas, people showed up that haven't showed up in my family in a long time. It was kind of beautiful. Yeah, it was.
Well, you're fighting against stigmas where families have been told they can't learn anything new. So why are you telling me that they can learn something new? You're not a doctor. The doctors are telling us over and over and over. And yet, I do a thing with Mary Crescenzo, who's a master artist out in California. And we do it by Zoom, and it's called Dementia in the Arts. And people showcase their artwork, and many of them never did art before dementia. And, things from jewelry and painting and photography and molding and, just all kinds of things. And, we're doing it to help break down those stigmas of you know, that is not true. You know, everything that we hear is not, you know, cast in stone, and every person is different. So they're going to react different. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing, you know, to me, if a caregiver has to learn that'll help them is try it. You got nothing to lose. Just try something new. The worst that's going to happen is you're going to be right and it didn't work. But you might see a miracle before your eyes. And I would encourage you to try it more than once in different times, because what works in one moment might not work the next. But to not be so rigid. I think we really have to be fluid when we're caring for somebody with dementia, and we have to be open to new ideas, because what we have right now, yeah, it's better than when my mom got diagnosed, you know, but it's a long ways from being perfect. Long way.
I like to say you have to enter their world. You have to be generous, ask them, for instance, ask them how to do something and make them feel like they're part of your home, that I have a value. Mm-hmm. I just felt valueless. I felt like, you know, my bathroom habits were disgusting to them. Well, understand why. I didn't know what I was doing with that. And I think a lot more patience, a lot more realizing that the person, their mind is so mixed up that they don't know what they're doing. I didn't realize if I did something disgusting that it was disgusting, for instance, or that I was asking questions over and over, or begging. That was a big one. I don't think people, and to this day, doctors, realize how much pain can affect a person with dementia. Because I had a terrible back problem that was totally dismissed. Oh, she's malingering. And even in hospice, where supposedly they give you all kinds of medication, I wasn't given the medication that I should have been given. I came home and I had begged for an MRI. And when I had that MRI, it showed I have severe, severe spinal problems. You know, and all that time I was just, you know, she's malingering. That hurt. Mm-hmm. That really hurt. So yeah. If the caregivers can start maybe a little trust, that I believe that. And so that's why I think my story can help people. If I would be happy to send it out to anybody who's interested in what they call NPF. You know, I send an email.
A PDF.
Sure, just send it. You give me your email and I'll send out PDF. It's long, so if you only want the caregiver section, let me know. I can just send that, specifically that, or the resource section. But someone said that's not a, it's not an autobiography, it's an autobiography. Because I had a really interesting life. A lot of stuff happened, and I kept overcoming. You know, I had to watch my baby die. That was tough. My mother's euthanasia, my son's prison, a lot of stuff I kept overcoming. I think that helped me in the long run to help my quote-unquote recovery, because of building up the resilience. Oh, and compassion, Lori, I got to add this one in. It's so important. And I think it was the compassion I felt for my poor little caregivers, who were small Asian women mostly, could not lift me because my body, I would just fall to the ground. I would crumple. And so they had to leave me in bed hours after hours, diaper, you know, just. And so I swear one day I said, I'm going to stand for these people. I'm going to stand for us. And I think compassion was the trigger. I think it was the trigger to start my recovery.
I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, Ginger. And her phone number is 650-585. 3233. And email is ginger and then speech, speech at gmail.com. And feel free to request your book, or maybe you have a question for her. I'm sure she would be more than glad to answer. And I would highly recommend for our audience, you know, be a giver of hope, like, click, and share. Pass Ginger's stories on to others. You don't know who in your sphere of influence needs to hear what she has to say. This is such an uncomfortable conversation for so many people.
It is.
And yet I feel personally, I mean, I know I've learned from you today. I know people who are diagnosed or are struggling to get a diagnosis would learn from you. Their families, as well as professionals. None of us are in this alone, and we all have an effect on anyone who's diagnosed and the ones that care for them. So we have to have these conversations out loud, without embarrassment, without judgment, and just learn. Again, Ginger, thank you so much for your time today. And I would also like to just remind people, if you're looking for some free educational resources, you can go to alzheimerspeaks.com. We've got a ton of them there. You can also access our book, Betty the Bald Chicken, Lessons in How to Care. And if you're looking for someone for a conference or staff training, I do that as well. And I'm sure Ginger would love to talk to you as well. So we've got resources. Tap into them. Have a brilliant week, everyone. Bye now.
I'm so honored. So honored. Thank you, Lori.
It's time to rethink, renew, and reimagine retirement. Hey, everybody. Jared Sylvester here, host of Retire Repurposed. Now, this podcast is about the non-financial parts of retirement, which many times can be even more challenging than the financial. We believe retirement is not the end, rather the beginning of what could be the most impactful, purposeful, and fulfilling season of a person's life. So don't retire. Become repurposed. To listen now, search Retire Repurposed on your favorite podcast platform, Senior Resource, or Life Audio.